You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
In my relationship coaching, I've noticed that there is a recurring theme that's around honesty, really around dishonesty. And that is when I hear somebody say, how can I make my spouse be honest with me? How can I keep my spouse from lying to me? How can I get my spouse to be honest and not be dishonest? And what I've noticed about that is that it comes in lots of different fronts. There are lots of reasons that people give for being dishonest, but they really only break down to really four different areas and only three that are kind of the more often. There is one reason that is pretty rare, even though we see it a lot in our culture. It's not something that we actually see clinically very often. So let's first talk a little bit about what I mean by dishonesty. For me, dishonesty comes from both omissions and commissions. What I mean by that is dishonesty can be about not saying something or about saying something misleading or just flat out misleading somebody. And so a lot of times I notice that there is a dishonesty in a relationship because the real issues, the real struggles, the real pains are not talked about. So it's kind of that place of omission. And then there are times when somebody just flat out tries to mislead, either by talking or by actions, where they're committing the dishonesty. Now, let's be honest here and say that just as a ground rule, we all have some level of dishonesty or hiddenness. That's just the nature of humans. It's probably one of those most interesting things about humans. I haven't ever watched a dog try to lie to another dog or try to mislead another dog. Now, I know so there are some times in nature when there is some level of misleading in order to win the fight. But what we're talking about here is peer-to-peer, you know, misleading that happens not in a struggle, but just in life. And so part of what happens is that we humans have these thoughts that come into our head, and they are thoughts that we never want to have to reveal to anybody else. They're thoughts that are dark. And to be honest, I'm kind of glad that there's some level of dishonesty in the fact that we don't say everything on our minds. There's just no reason to do that. There are a lot of times when the dishonesty really is over hurtful things and dangerous things, but let's just be honest and say that we, none of us, are entirely honest. Your friend comes up and says, hey, what do you think about my new hairdo? You're probably not going to give your bad review if you don't like it. You might soften a little bit. The same about clothes or lots of other kind of trivial things. Or maybe they talk about a friend and you're not going to say bad things about that friend. And so in some ways we have this place where it's kind of, it smooths off the social frictions. It's kind of a way of greasing the social interactions of not being totally honest. So we all have this level of honesty, and there's another level of that, which is about privacy, that we all have some level where we want to hold on to some private places in our lives. And this can be about a number of different things. I once had a client whose way that he kind of stayed outside of being sucked in was he would tell his wife a different place than where he ate lunch. It was kind of funny because a number of years ago, I saw the same plot on a TV show, and I thought, wow, you know, I've seen this before in real life where the person wouldn't really tell the real place that he ate. Now, the wife knew that he ate out, so she didn't care about that. And it really wasn't like he was eating a $25 steak lunch and saying it was a $5 hamburger. It was just like I ate at Hardee's, not McDonald's, right? And so it was almost on the same level, but he did not want to let her know exactly where he had been. And that was his way of kind of maintaining his privacy. Now, I don't think it was a good way of doing it, but that was the reason for that. Well, one day somebody saw him at lunch. And so when he told her where he was and the other person had already said where she'd seen him, there was a problem. There was a conflict. And so what was interesting is then he began to be dishonest about the sandwich he ordered, the type of food he would order. So, you know, he would say he ordered a cheeseburger and he really ordered a fish fillet. And so he was keeping something out, something that really was insignificant and not meaningful out because he had a place of privacy, a sense of control that he had around him. And so what I really want to do is draw a distinction between benign dishonesty and corrosive dishonesty. Now, benign dishonesty is when your friend asks about the hairstyle or the outfit or what you think of the invitation to the party or something like that. That's benign. It doesn't really hurt anybody that you've held back your real feelings, and it probably has even helped keep some things going, right? Some friendships going, because if everybody told us what they didn't like about us, we wouldn't have many friends around. And so then there is the corrosive. And the corrosive are the things that eat away at the relationships. These are the ones where we really think about those dishonesty pieces. And when I hear from people about the dishonest things in marriage that they're talking about, it really is more of a corrosive element. And so part of what I hear about are the things like having affairs or looking at porn or having some problems with their finances or, you know, not paying off the bills or having tax issues, things like that. Those are the big ones, and they are corrosive because you're trying to trust this other person to walk through life with you and to kind of have each other's backs. And then you find out that there are these other pieces that are floating around. Those are the corrosive pieces, and those are the ones that are damaging to the relationship. Now, I will say I've seen plenty of people who got very upset about the benign because there was a belief within them that if somebody would say something that was the benign, that probably they were also hiding the corrosive. And to be honest, I don't think that's the case. I think we all have some level of benign dishonesty. That's just the way we go through life, and it doesn't mean that we have these character flaws. The problem is, what I've noticed is that whenever there is kind of the revelation of these dishonesties, often what happens is the initial response from the spouse that's been lied to, and it's understandable, will say, "Why didn't you tell me?" Or, "Why didn't you be honest with me?" Or, "Why did you lie to me?" And then they don't get the result they want. And part of the reason is because that kind of "why did you" question rarely gets us anywhere that we want to get to. It comes across as very parental, right? Instead of being spouse, now you've gone to parents. Remember when your parents said, "Why did you do that? Why did you hit your brother? Why did you hit your sister? Why did you pull your sister's hair? Why did you, you know, push them down the steps?" All those things that come from childhood. Why did you do that? And usually we don't even know why, right? And so there is a parenting element that steps into that. And then there is a shaming element that's behind that. So then the person not only has been dishonest and has been caught, but they're shamed about that. And usually what do we do when we shame? We're shamed as we hide. That's just kind of human nature. And so a lot of times that reaction comes across as being very parental, very shaming, and very accusatory. And really, the why question breaks down to a question of why are people dishonest in that way? And I really think that there are four core reasons why there is this corrosive dishonesty. And the first one I just want to kind of mention and then move off to the side because it's the rare one, and that's the pathological reasons for lying. Now, some people would claim that all lying is pathological, but what I'm talking about here are really two levels. One is the pathological liar by definition, and the other is the psychopath or the sociopath. Those two get kind of melded together in our society, and there's not a great deal of real clear distinction anymore between those terms. But basically, the psychopath, sociopath is the person who is preying on other people. They're the con artists. They're the criminals. They're the ones who are taking advantage of people in order to get ahead and not feeling bad about it. It's kind of a lack of Jiminy Cricket being around them. They just don't have any place where their conscience is telling them that they're doing something wrong. And so there's that level. And then what we've known by looking at these folks, these psychopaths and sociopaths, is that when they tell a lie, a part of their whole way of being, they don't feel bad about it. That conscience is not triggered. They don't feel bad about it. That's as opposed to the pathological liar. Now, the pathological liar is the person who really just tells stories so dazzling, so huge, that they really are almost breaching the limits of plausibility, right? You just don't even believe that these things could have happened in their life. And that's where they begin to grow this fantasy life. Well, they've been hooked up to lie detectors, and we know that there is some discomfort, some feeling of badness as they're telling the stories, but they won't back down from them because it's pathological, and we're really not clear about what creates that. So the reason I kind of point to that, the pathological level, whether it's a pathological liar or the psychopath or sociopath, is because that's rare. And that's not likely to be what you're dealing with on the home front. So I just want to set that aside, because if that's what it is, really, it's kind of a bigger issue. That person would need, and let's be honest, if they're a psychopath or a sociopath, they're not going to get help, at least not without being caught legally. A pathological liar may decide that they are so caught up in this web of deceit that they've got to go and get some help. So let's then talk about these other three reasons why people tend to be dishonest, and they're the common reasons. In a marriage, one of the big ones is disconnection. You know by now, if you've been listening to me, that this level of connection is necessary in a marriage to just feel a part of it. You know, when I hear people say, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore, I don't feel it anymore, part of what they're telling me is they don't feel connection. And so when there is a lot of disconnection, it becomes very easy to just avoid things by not telling the truth. And so there's an avoidance level to that, but it's grounded in disconnection. I have so little connection to you that I don't care if I'm not telling you the truth. I don't care to have to explain myself, so I'm just going to skirt it and be dishonest or misleading. And so one level of this whole reason for dishonesty is that disconnection in the relationship. Another reason is because they're hiding something, and that something usually is something of shame or something they want to protect. And that could cover a lot of different areas, but oftentimes it's things like pornography, that they're using a lot of pornography, or that they are addicted to something, you know, whether it's a substance or gambling or something like that, that they don't want to have public, or there's an affair and they want to protect that relationship. So they're going to be dishonest about where they were and what they were doing as a way of protecting that relationship. And in some ways, they may be even trying to protect the relationship of the marriage. Now, I'm not saying that that's an appropriate way of doing it. I'm just saying that sometimes we use maladaptive ways of dealing with situations. And so it can be maladaptive to try to protect the relationship that way instead of just avoiding affairs. But that is the nature of this. Also, sometimes there is a shame or need to protect when there are financial problems. You know, maybe you feel shameful that they're, you know, you're carrying in $50,000 of credit card debt that is based on crazy stuff, right? Or maybe you realize that you cheated the IRS and they're after you and you want to hide that from your spouse. So there are lots of reasons that might fall into that category. But basically, these are the areas where people have some shame or some need to protect. And so they're hiding. The dishonesty is a way of hiding. And then there is the other type, which is a fear of reaction. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the fear is justified, but it often is justified that somewhere along the way in the past, they learned that if they were to be honest, the reaction they're going to get by what they have to be honest about is going to be out of proportion. And so they avoid it, at least out of proportion in their own mind. And so they avoid it and they lie. And this is a big relational piece. In fact, all three of these are clearly relational pieces. But that last one is about how they are fearing the reaction of the hearer of the honesty. You know, if I were to tell the truth, what your reaction would be. And so instead of facing up with that, they're dishonest. Now, I want to be clear here that there is a difference between me excusing this and explaining it. I'm not saying that any of these are okay as much as to tell you why it might be happening. That's the explanatory piece. It's kind of like, you know, if you were to go to the doctor and they can tell you why something's wrong, they don't have to point to, let's just excuse it. The fact that this was going on behind the scenes excuses why this is going on. There is the explanation. And the explanation has nothing to do with the excuse. So I point those out as a way of kind of using those as reference points, because it's going to be very important. Because what do, right? You've got a spouse that has been dishonest. How do you deal with that? Well, first of all, let's talk about your own place. You can't make someone be honest. It's not possible. And so a lot of times I'll have people write in and they'll say, how do I get my spouse to be honest? Or I'm listening to them on a coaching call and they want me to teach them how to get somebody to be honest. And I will tell you that I'm always a little reactive to the word get, because if you're going to get somebody to do something, it's going to be coercive. It's going to be forced. There's something that's going to come from you that's going to try to force that other person to do something. And that's a failure point. It's a failure point because you don't have that power. You can't make someone be honest. That is a personal standard. I've talked about this before, but a standard is what you expect of yourself. Now, there is a boundary. A boundary is what you will not allow somebody else to do. But a standard, as honesty as a standard, is something you expect of yourself. So you can say, I expect myself to be as honest as possible, as, you know, possible in relationship, as honest as socially acceptable. And in doing that, I'm going to be choosing that for my own way. But you can't put that on somebody else. Oftentimes when I'm talking about standards, people will say, you know, you should be able to do that. You should be able to put something on somebody else, like a child. You should be able to make that child be honest. And my response is, how can you do that? So you can say to a child or a spouse, you've got to be honest with everyone, but you have no control as soon as they're away from you. They might lie as soon as they walk away from you, and you have no way of changing that. You have no way of making them your puppet. And so when I say you can't make someone be honest, that's what I mean. You have no way of making them, of forcing them to do that. But you can, if you choose, this is number two, you can set consequences. And you may decide to do that by setting up a consequence of, if you're dishonest with me, here's what's going to happen. For instance, if I find out you're being dishonest about these finances, then we're going to have to separate our finances and I'm going to have to get an accountant. Or if I find out you're lying about this person, then I will not be married to you any longer, right? And so the problem with a consequence is it really kind of pulls you away from them, right? The separation is a part of any consequence, is a separation of some sort. Separating finances, separating from the person, separating your discussions, separating actions, lots of things of those separations. So you can set consequences, but they may have a reverse reaction that you don't want. You know, if you say, you can never lie to me, if you do, I'll divorce you, and then they lie to you, you know, do you follow through, or do you demonstrate that that really wasn't a consequence? It really wasn't a boundary for you after all. So where you can start to make some headway is to look for the reasons. Why is this person lying to me? And I would always suggest you at least consider the possibility that it's a fear of your reaction. Okay, so let's go with a couple of these. First one is the disconnection piece. What if it's about disconnection? What if you go, wow, I think the reason I'm being lied to is because we are so disconnected that this person doesn't care how I react and respond, doesn't care what I'm thinking, just is trying to avoid any conflict. Well, then you start focusing on the connection, rebuilding the connection, recognizing that until the connection is there, Jiminy Cricket may be out to lunch. After the connection is there, the conscience may return some into the relationship, and they begin to want to be honest and truthful because they want to have that connection. So one of the places is to understand that that disconnection is really kind of the root cause of a lot of situations, and that until that's rebuilt, it's going to be a recurring issue. The second one is to recognize the other two reasons of either wanting to hide something or the fear of the reaction really are based in fear, a fear of acceptance and your reaction. It's a big fear piece of fearing what's going to happen to the relationship. Now, the good news is that both of those come from a place of wanting to hold on to the relationship, wanting to protect the relationship, wanting to have something there. And so you begin to deal with, is there a place where the way you react is not beneficial? Is there a way that you need to change your reaction in order for there to be some safety for being honest with each other? And I would suggest that you think about this as the dance of honesty, that it takes two people to be in this dance of what happens when there is honesty and what happens when there's dishonesty. You only are responsible to play your steps. You can't keep somebody from being dishonest. You can't force them to tell you the truth. You can invite honesty. You can invite connection. And you can look at how you're dancing those steps as a way of bringing a different step. You know, if you change your dance steps, typically the other person has to change their dance steps too. It's just part of the nature of this dance. Think about this dance of honesty and what are the parts that you're playing, and then recognize these reasons are within the other person. And the other thing I would suggest you do is look at your own place of honesty. Is there a place where you need to raise your standard about your own honesty and how you're interacting in this relationship so that the other person is not asking me that question, what do I do to get to this honest place? This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.